activate the view screen, and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast.
The Time Traveling Robots in Space podcast starts now.
It is Thursday, April 26th, 2012, and welcome to yet another Galactic Netcast. This is The Time Traveling Robots in Space, number 30. From Wausau, Wisconsin, I'm Dave Nelson, alongside Mr. Paul Swickard from Glendale, California. How are you, Paul?
I do well, good sir. And what you didn't mention is that this podcast was rated number one in Time Traveling Robots and Space podcasts. So,
oh, what?
There you go.
Okay.
To all voted by me and you and our listeners. So that's all that matters. So that's what makes me happy. And, you know, bravo to all of you. Thanks for everyone who voted.
So in the category of podcasts that deal with time travel, robots, and space, and particularly, in particular, the name of the podcast, we're number one.
Oh, easily.
Sweet.
There is no contest. I know.
We are the champions.
I feel better about myself.
We are the winners. All right. Before we get underway, before we lose our guest that's in the Spreecast chat room, if you are just joining us for the first time and you haven't signed in yet to Spreecast, there is a button in the upper right-hand corner of your screen, which you can sign in using your Twitter or Facebook credentials. That way we can see who you are and you can participate in the chat room, because the chat room is probably the most important part of this whole damn thing. And if you're new to the show, this is the podcast where we talk about all things time travel, robots, and space in media and the news. Paul and I take a crack at each subject one by one. We discuss it, and then we talk about our recommendations, and then we do the question of the week, which, by the way, Paul, this week is a multiple choice, our very first multiple choice, I think. No.
I tend to do better with those than the essay questions. I tend to do better. But we'll see. It's anybody's guess.
I think we've done multiple choice before, but I think we've never done... We have three or four multiple choice questions, so I think that's the most that we've had of the multiple choice.
Sure. Sure, absolutely. And you know what? If you have all these, you know, it's almost like asking... It's the difference between asking, what would your favorite alternate universe be versus, you know, what would your favorite... Which of the following things is your favorite alternate universe? You know?
Yeah, it's a lot easier to answer.
Prehistoric, we'll say a universe made entirely of candy, or a universe where everything looks like a cartoon. You pick.
That is a hard decision. I like those both. All right.
Sorry, I didn't mean to do the question of the week before the question of the week.
No.
But hey, there you go.
You've given me an idea for a future question of the week. So kudos to you, my friend. Thank you very much.
Oh, thanks.
All right. In the future, if you'd like to see us do the show live, if you're an audio listener and want to see us do the show in the flesh as we make all the mistakes, we stream it on Spreecast.com every Thursday at 9 p.m. Central Time. That's 7 p.m. where Paul is, Pacific Time. And for our Spreecast.com viewers, feel free to take part in the show, ask questions in the chat room, or submit them where it says comment or question. So let's get the show on the road.
Sector 1, time travel.
All right. The IM 8-bit gallery located at, you may be familiar with this address, Paul, 8-bit gallery located in a 4,500 square foot space in Echo Park on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles, California, currently has a series of pieces on display called So You Created a Wormhole. In it, over 40 artists.
I like it.
Yeah, this is a really cool. I love these modern gallery type things. These modern gallery type shows that they put on. This one has 40 artists involved. Each explore time travel throughout popular culture, from film to literature and beyond, while celebrating the launch of a new book, So You Created a Wormhole, The Time Traveler's Guide to Time Travel by Mr. Phil Hornshaw and Mr. Nick Hurwitz. Some of the pieces on display include a drawing of the DeLorean from Back to the Future, hitting Abraham Lincoln with an astonished Marty McFly, all freaked out. He's like, he's coming out of his driver's door, and he's like, "What the hell's going on?" Another show is the DeLorean again, this time, but hitting the TARDIS from Doctor Who. There's also a time trap.
We gotta go back to 1985.
There's also a time traveling baby stroller as part of the show, which is fully functional as a baby stroller, not a time traveling device. Yeah. we have a link to a video.
That's too bad.
Yeah, we have a link that shows the time traveling baby stroller in action in the show notes, and I will put it there right now for our video viewers. You can check it out. This is the link to the story right here. And I'll also, hang on, I screwed up. Oh, Paul, I'm a screw
up. What did you do?
All right, there's the link to the actual story. And this is the link to the video showing the time-traveling baby stroller. It's pretty neat, I have to say. And Paul, I'm kind of jealous because you're so close by. You could just go 20 minutes away, maybe. I don't know. I don't know Los Angeles. Maybe longer than that, but it's it's closer to you than it is me.
Well, the thing is with LA, if you're talking like, you know, 10 miles, that's easily a, you know, half hour drive if, you know, in a non rush hour time.
Yeah. And
yeah, there, I mean, you could be practically anywhere in LA, and if it will take you an hour to get there. I don't care if you have to walk a block. But it will take time. Let's just say that. It'll take time.
You're walking a block in a half hour. Now, that's what you call a time paradox right there. You got to have some serious issues if it's going to take you a half hour to walk a block.
It's either a time paradox or my inability to follow directions. Either way, I don't care.
Paul needs his phone with the GPS to walk a block. Paul is that inept when it comes to directions and where to go.
It's kind of sad how true that is. And you know, what's worse is that my phone does not even close to a GPS. Like it's an old flip phone. It's nowhere. I'm way behind on the technology.
Well, maybe you can use some of that money that you came into recently to buy a nice smartphone.
I know, that would be a wise investment, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Who needs food and stuff? All right, so
not us.
No.
We're special.
Yeah. You're like these, you're from the future where you don't need food to exist.
I know. I take food in pill form.
So you created a wormhole is now on through April 28th or 29th, excuse me, at the IM 8-bit gallery on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles. So go check it out. All right. Time travel.
Okay.
Paul, you're up.
This summer is shaping up to be a really good time at the box office. At least that's what I'm seeing. And among them is Men in Black 3. You may have heard of this film originally from 1997, if you could figure that one out. 97, Dave.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're old.
Wow.
Well, you're older.
Yeah, I'm older.
I'm old still.
Yeah, we're both older than some. You're younger than me. It's fine. Go ahead. Continue.
Well, CBS, among others, were the first among to get some preview impressions in Las Vegas. And I figured I would share some of their impressions with everybody else. And they call this film a bromance, which I don't know if I agree with. I don't know. Would you call MI the Men in Black series?
I don't know.
Anybody?
I guess it could be interpreted that way. Maybe just because of the whole, you know, buddies fighting aliens side by side, very, you know, but bromance? No, I don't think so.
I can see it. I don't know. I kind of was like, bromance, really? I don't think that accurately characterizes the film. Anyway, in the preview, Smith and Jones survive a fight with an oversized fish in Chinatown, at a Chinatown restaurant ripe with alien patrons. Only Jones's character, Agent K, only to have Tommy Lee Jones's Agent K suddenly disappear. And they say you look like you come from the planet Dam, as in D-A-M-N. There's a planet called Dam.
Oh.
I have no idea what the what the planet is like, but this is what Agent Smith Smith's Agent J. They didn't really write this very well. Tells the fish before attacking it with a mustard-filled squirt bottle. So apparently, I am envisioning Will Smith fighting a giant fish with mustard. Basically, that's what it sounds. That is what they're making this sound like.
Is this the scene where I saw in the preview where he's telling the crowd? Because they saw the alien, Will Smith is telling the crowd that this is what happens when you flush your fish down the toilet. Is that the scene? Okay.
Yes, that's the culmination of the line. That's one thing that they saw. Another line they like to point out is Smith. This is Will Smith's character saying to Tommy Lee Jones that he's getting too old for this, and then Tommy Lee Jones, you know, coming back, turning with that look that he has, going like, "I can't imagine how you feel," that kind of thing.
Does he say I'm getting too old for this S word, or just I'm getting too old for this?
At least in what they've written here, there is no S word. Okay. I'm getting too old for this.
All right, we'll find out.
I did not
when the movie comes out.
I did not intentionally censor anything. In the latest installment, Smith has 24 hours to go back in time and save his partner and the world, apparently. Multiple spaceships hover over the sky menacingly in this particular scene. Okay. So it almost sounds like they're adopting the Bill and Ted's version of time travel. You can travel back in time, but the current time is still going. Mm-hmm. You can go back in time, but you can't actually like stop time.
Okay.
So it seems like they're saying that at least I may be reading way too much into that, but at least that's what it sounds like. When Smith actually does go back in time, Josh Brolin plays a younger Agent K, and his coworkers include this is again 1969 artist Andy Warhol, who tracks down aliens when he isn't hosting glamorous parties with hippies and models.
That is awesome.
Smith continues with his snappy lines, warning Warhol that he isn't above quote unquote pimp slapping him. And last but not, well, actually two more tidbits. One, Smith's journey through time also leads him to fending off a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I had no idea. Like, you know, of course, from the previews that the general public guesses is obviously very different. But at least at some point, we're getting dinosaurs. So look forward to that. And at least according to one other source, both Lady Gaga and Justin Bieber make brief appearances in the film.
Yeah, I read that.
So I would imagine that both of them are portraying aliens in some form.
Yeah, I read that this week. Very suspicious,
yeah.
And thinking the same thing that you were thinking, that they've got to be aliens of some form.
Lady Gaga is kind of like a gimme.
Yeah, she's an alien already, so it's not much of a stretch. I've seen the trailers. I've seen the footage from Men in Black 3, and it's very interesting how Will Smith travels back in time. He has to jump off of the Empire State Building, which... You know what?
It's the Chrysler Building.
Oh, it is.
That's what they're saying. Chrysler Building.
Okay, so I'm a big fan of time travel. If I had the chance to go back in time, I wouldn't do it. If I had to jump off a tall building like that, there's no way, no freaking way.
Are you afraid of heights, Dave?
I am deathly afraid of heights. You will not like
really, even if you knew, even if you convinced yourself, like you had reasonable evidence to suspect that you would not, in fact, die from plummeting off of the Chrysler Building. I'm not advocating plummeting off the Chrysler Building. I'm just saying, if you knew to a reasonable doubt that you would be just peachy keen if you were to fall, you still would not go. if given the opportunity to time travel.
If I saw the time vortex from before I started to jump, then I would do it.
Uh-huh.
If I had to wait halfway or wait till the very last second to see that vortex open, no way I'd do it. Uh-uh.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have discovered Dave's, you know, kryptonite. Wow. All right. Good to know. I didn't know this about you, Dave. I figured you would go, I mean, for the opportunity to time travel, I figured you'd be all over it.
No. There's certain things I will not do, and that's definitely one of them. I have, and this is a fear that has gotten worse over the years. As I've gotten older, my fear of heights has just increased, and it's really, really frustrating because I'll watch a movie with them dinking around on a high building, like Mission Impossible 3. Was it 3 or 4 that came out this last year? 4?
Are you kidding? He's always falling off of something. Every single Mission Impossible movie, he is falling from something. I promise. Pick your pick. But the most recent one is 4. So, okay. Yes, again, yeah. Very tall building that he, you know, nearly falls off of.
That was tough to watch. And Anessa in the chat room suggests I go skydiving. Yeah, not going to happen. Sorry. No way. No how. So.
My wife said that I can go skydiving. I just, I can't let her know about it until after it's already done.
Wow. Okay. I see how that is.
Yeah. She didn't want to know. Men in Black 3. Yes. Back to topic.
No, it's okay.
It's us on May 25th. It's coming up here. 1 month.
There's a lot of good movies coming out. Battleship.
Yeah.
I have heard from people that have seen it.
You're not going to get into Battleship again.
No. I've talked to people that have seen it that they say it's awesome. It's a good movie. People have seen it. It's selling out like crazy in international markets.
Internationally. Waterworld did well internationally. I don't think we can judge cinematic quality by how well it does in sales. The Smurfs did great in the box office.
Okay.
That does not make it a good movie.
I have talked to somebody from Ireland. So he is an English speaker, all right?
He was drunk when he saw it. No, I promise.
No, he wasn't. He said it wasn't like a masterpiece or anything, but it was a fun romp, he said. It was a fun romp. He said, don't take it seriously. If you do, then it won't be any fun. So you have to go in with the right mindset and you'll enjoy it, he said. So.
If Liam Neeson does not say, you've sunk my battleship during that film,
he doesn't.
I am going to.
That's the one spoiler.
Does anybody say it? Anybody? Tim Regan's. Did Tim Regan say it?
I don't know. We'll find out when Battleship opens.
You completely ruined my experience.
No,
with this
I didn't.
Film already.
No, I didn't.
I
calm down. Calm down, Paul.
I'm gonna die here on podcast. But you are witnessing my death, Dave. Oh man.
He's acting. He's not.
All
serious.
Right. I'm done.
Okay. So we've got the Avengers coming up. In a couple of weeks, we have Men in Black 3. We've got Prometheus. Mm-hmm. We've got The Dark Knight. And that's just, there's some more after that, too. So we've got a good summer of movies coming up.
I want to see the next Pixar film, Brave. I'm really looking forward to that one. And there's others. Like, there's all kinds of stuff. I forget. But yeah, that's just the beginning of the summer. It's like, geez, we haven't hit July yet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. So there you go. Men in Black 3 is one to go see this summer. If you want to weigh in on anything that we've talked about so far on this show, like Men in Black 3, if you want to agree with me that Battleship's going to be a great movie, or if you take Paul's side on this, let us know. You can leave us feedback by emailing.
My side on this.
No. GalacticNetcasts@gmail.com. We've got a voicemail number, 805-328-3966. You can also leave comments through Twitter. We're at Galactic Netcasts. You can search for Galactic Netcasts with an extra S at the end on Facebook and Google+. And we'd love to hear from you. So let's move on to the next portion of the podcast, which is this.
Sector 2.
Roach.
You love how I stretch for time as I'm finding the file to play. Wasn't
you quite... know that was completely seamless. Had you not actually mentioned anything,
damn it!
You completely ruined the illusion. So, good job.
All right. Okay.
No.
Are you ready?
No, it was good.
Okay. Are you ready for combat robots on the mean streets of the U.S., Paul?
I just, before I came here, I saw Real Steel. So absolutely, I'm ready for combat robots.
All right, here we go.
Where are they?
All right, I'm about to tell you. After a decade of wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, battlefield robots will soon find new uses in police departments across the country. That's what an official with the Defense Logistics Agency told a conference in Washington recently. Any police or homeland security department with counterterrorism or anti-drug mission and the ability to execute an arrest warrant can be eligible to get their very own battle robot. Dan Arnold, a regional manager of the agency's disposition office, I'm going to work at the disposition office, says that hundreds of war-hardened bots will be donated to police departments, National Defense reported. So these bots have seen action, and they're ready to take on the U.S., and they're coming to a neighborhood near you.
Wow.
Yeah.
War-hardened. What does that even like? Does that mean they've all been fighting other people? Does that mean they've been fighting each other?
Okay.
Like, have they successfully fended off attack dogs? What's going on?
Let me explain more. That was just the writer being all fancy with his words. These aren't like Real Steel robots. These aren't the T-2000s. These are not RoboCops, all right? These robotic police recruits are bots used for tactical surveillance or for explosive handling. Things like the Throwbot, a small robot that is tossed by troops around corners to expand their fields of vision, or the Packbot and Talon machines. I love Talon machines, which have become central to bomb disposal in places like Afghanistan. There's a larger trend at work here. Today's military tech is very often tomorrow's civilian police tech. Miami-Dade police already fly a spy robot developed for the Pentagon, and the Department of Homeland Security really likes the military's ability to see giant swaths of land at once. So they've got all these bots that have they don't need to use anymore because Iraq's over with, Afghanistan is slowly winding down, and they need more. They need new uses for them, so they're going to give them to police departments all over the country.
Huh. I am reminded of the failed experiments in the Robocop 2 movie. That is all.
Okay. Well, these aren't quite there. These aren't quite to that sophistication in robot technology.
Is it wrong that when you say Talon robot, I immediately think of a mechanical velociraptor? Is that wrong? Talon robot.
Big claws. You're ripping at your flesh.
I don't know. Maybe it's just a holdover for the MI3 thing. But yeah, we're mixing worlds here. No, anything that can, in all seriousness, anything that can help out bomb disposal is probably a good thing if it's just a machine.
It's very interesting. Every time that this world goes to war, especially a developed country like the U.S., our technology always advances, like big time. And these wars that we've been fighting the last 10 years has actually develop technology that we are just barely seeing, that we're going to start seeing more and more in our daily lives, because this happens every single time. Because just think of it, Vietnam, I think a lot of the technology used in Vietnam went towards the technological innovations of the 70s and 80s. So we're going to see these robots used by police departments, but then they're going to be developed even more. Like, they're kind of dumb right now. Like, they're just basically robots being controlled by somebody with a video camera or whatever, or a video monitor.
Sure.
But these robots will eventually become smart and aware. And that's when Skynet takes over and we're all screwed.
Yeah. Singularity, Dave. Remember that. Singularity.
Yep. All right.
If DARPA is any indication, then yeah, absolutely. We're going to get robots that are scary.
Yeah.
Like, we're already kind of getting there. Like, these things might easily get to the point of, I don't know, our ability to control them. Question mark?
Yeah.
More coming soon. Coming to your, you know, podcast apocalypse.
I like that a lot. I saw a video. I think I was looking at robot videos for potential stories to talk about on the podcast. And one of them was this robot that they showed walking upstairs. It was like one of the scariest things I've seen. Have you seen that video?
Mm-hmm. I have. It's impressive.
Yeah.
It looks like a person walking up steps, and one might not think that that's terribly complicated, but for a robot, stairs are their mortal enemy.
All right, let's go from
stairs in front of a robot.
Let's go from a kind of scary angle on the robot thing to a more, I don't know, optimistic view, a more pleasurable view on the whole robot thing. Which is leading you into your story, Paul. What do you got for us?
Thank you for that, Dave. And, you know, we teased this last week. And for those of you who are coming back to listen to this, you're welcome. Brothels will offer robot prostitutes by 2050, researchers predict. Yeah. And this is how it's phrased. In the future, brothels will serve up robot prostitutes offering clean, guilt-free sex, says researchers.
Oh, I love this story.
Okay. Now, you know what? There's a lot to comment on, so why don't I just read the whole thing? Anywho, the prediction was made by Ian Yeoman and Michelle Mars of the Victoria Management School in Wilmington, New Zealand. Way to go, New Zealand. In a research paper examining what the sex industry will be like in the year 2050. So, yeah. The two wrote about an imaginary brothel in Amsterdam, Amsterdam Red Light District, in a research paper titled Robots, Men, and Sex Tourism. It describes the brothel where clients would pay $9,500 for a quote-unquote all-inclusive service featuring lap dances and intercourse from a range of sexual gods and goddesses of different ethnicity, body shapes, ages, languages, and sexual features.
Can I?
Thanks, New Zealand.
Can I interrupt for a second?
No. We got to keep going.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Sorry. No.
Continue.
No, please.
Okay.
Please go ahead. Comment. This is what you're here for.
I was going to say that this opens up all kinds of possibilities because not only will you have human female looking robots, but you can have robots made into other things and not like the sick, animals, bestiality type. I'm talking like alien.
Dave, what are you talking about?
Like, you know, women from Total Recall with three breasts.
Sorry. You want to have a robot green lady that, you know, Kirk has often, that kind of thing?
I never said Andorians or whatever they are from Star Trek, the green women. I never said that, Paul. You're putting words into my mouth. I said three-breasted woman from Total Recall.
I don't think so. One can infer quite a bit. I'm just saying.
But I'm just saying, you know, this opens this. I mean, because it doesn't have to be limited to human females when it comes to robots. If you can make a sex robot, you can make a sex robot into anything.
I absolutely agree with you, Dave. And kudos to you for thinking outside of the box. I like that.
Thank you.
You know, I mean, if you wanted to run a brothel, you got it made, man. You're good. Oh, okay. Of course it's from Fox News.
Yeah.
Whatever. Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to get too political with that statement.
It's fine. I was thinking the same thing.
Please. It raises a lot of interesting questions. The lifelike sex robots would offer people a guilt-free sexual experience devoid of sexually transmitted diseases. No, you just get all kinds of other horrible diseases that nobody wants to talk about because of the androids made of bacteria-resistant fiber, and they actually haven't had sex with a real person, therefore don't have to lie with their partner. And by the way, they do say that. Like, I'm not making that up. The researcher said they actually haven't had sex with a real person and therefore don't have to lie to your partner.
Yeah.
So, you know, me being married, I don't have to lie to my wife saying, hey, I have not had sex with another person.
Because you did.
True.
You didn't. This is having sex with a robot is the same as self-pleasure. You know? I mean... don't you think?
Moral questions. I don't know. But anyway, okay, yes. On the one angle, yes, you have a outlet for, we'll say, I don't know, sexual needs. In other words, but this actually, some of the different things that would happen as a result of this. They also predict that robot prostitution would actually stop human trafficking associated with the sex industry, which makes sense. I don't know if I think that's true, but if you got a robot that was quote unquote just as good as a normal person, you would think that, all right, there's no need to actually get real people because there's in theory they would be easier to take care of, like, you know,
yeah,
real people you actually have to maintain a little bit, you know, maintain more than you might a robot. But that's all conjecture. That idea is all predicated on hey, this robot is just as lifelike or just as whatever as a real person. And I don't know that that would ever be the case.
No, I don't think so.
It might eventually, but that's assuming an awful lot because it would have to be really good at faking human emotion.
Yeah.
Let's just say that.
Yeah. Because, I mean, men, you know, they always say, you know, it's not emotional. It's, you know, you're just in it for the sex. Or even women say this, you know, you're just in it for the pleasure. But you can say that all you want. There is emotion involved in this, even if you're not aware of it. And there's a lot of other factors, too. I mean, there's, you know, feeling the pulse of the other person, you know. This is getting really personal, by the way. This is getting really, I don't know, deep. But yeah, I see what you're saying. They're going to have to go along. The technology is going to have to become just crazy good for people to actually start using sex robots as a legitimate alternative to a real prostitute.
I don't know. It's hard to say. And I don't for a second think that women are going to be assuming that this would be primarily directed towards men. I don't think that's true. I think probably both would have a fair shake at it, so to speak. But I don't buy for a second that, you know, your partner, whoever that might be, is going to be okay with you regularly going to a robot prostitute. I don't think that's going to fly at all, ever.
Yeah.
To believe that is just... I don't buy it.
But I think
I do not buy that at all.
But I think I think something like this will be easier for people to like that wouldn't have gone to a prostitute before and would maybe, you know, instead of having unprotected or you know, have promiscuous sex and spreading STDs, they would go to a robot prostitute. And then in that
case,
go ahead.
In that sense, it is better. in that sense. But those are all pragmatic, practical things. That doesn't change any of the emotions or any of the personality. I don't know quite the right way to say that other than emotions. That does not change the scenario at all.
Mm-hmm. No.
One other thing, I mean, once you go into this idea of, you know, people having a quote unquote relationship with a sex bot, you're also sort of dancing into the idea of having an actual relationship with a human and a robot. So then you go into all of that. Okay, is it okay for a human to marry a robot? And then we start up that whole debate. So yeah, it's gonna be fun.
You know how the Republicans will view getting married to a robot? They're gonna be all against it.
I do.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. Hard to say.
Yeah, we'll
that
find
is
out.
Hard to say.
We'll find out either 2050 or sometime after that. I mean, yeah. I'm in Amsterdam. Yeah, I'm saying that.
Of course, by then I'll be, shoot, how old will I be? Oh, I'm going to be old. I'm going to be 70. I'm going to be an old man.
I'm going to be older than you, Paul.
I'm completely interested in that.
But, you know, the great thing, by 2050, you know, we're going to be old, but maybe that's going to be the only alternative for us in 2050, for our age.
There's a lovely thought. Thanks, Dave. Yes, the only possible, you know, connection I can have with human being is obviously with a robot. So there you go.
See, this brings up a lot of moral and scientific issues. So
I know.
I think this is going to be a discussion that people are going to actually take seriously in the coming years. So I can't wait. It's going to be interesting. The future is always interesting, and I can't wait for it.
Indeed.
All right, we've got some really good stuff coming up, exciting stories. But before we dive into space, if you like science fiction, I'm sure you do because you're listening to this podcast. We've got other science fiction based podcasts, all courtesy of Galactic Netcasts. And I would suggest that you subscribe to our mega feed at galacticnetcast.com. That way, you can get this, the Time Traveling Robots in Space. You will get the Sci-Fi Film School and the Alien Invasion, plus all of our specials, including the Doctor Who show we did last week. And next week, we're doing an alternate universe show, which you and Brad, my partner from the Alien Invasion, will all be hosting. So I'm very much getting excited for that. So go to galacticnetcast.com, click on Contact Subscribe, and then either click on the iTunes logo or fill out the email form and subscribe to either the mega feed or each individual show by themselves. All right, here we go.
That's awesome.
Sector 3, space.
Very exciting stuff happened Tuesday night. Sci-Fi debuted their new slate of original scripted programming during their annual yearly upfront presentation. What they promised was a break from their current lineup of magical dramas and charmed artifact programming. Instead, the press was teased with potential shows about time travel, warring alien species, lunar colonies, and a space opera from one of the people behind Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Are you excited for this, Paul?
I'm thrilled. Really?
Yeah. There's some awesome shows on this list.
Sweet. That's awesome. I had no idea. Go ahead. No, I was genuinely surprised. I was like, oh, I did not know they were doing this. Okay. Yes.
Two of the shows.
Go.
One of the shows is called High Moon, based on the novel The Lotus Caves by John Christopher.
Pushed by Sapphire.
Shut up.
Sorry.
This imaginative out of this world series explores a world where the countries of Earth have established colonies to mine the moon's resources. When a new life form is discovered, chaos erupts as various factions race to uncover its powerful secrets. The show, which has no premiere date yet, is written and produced by Brian Fuller. We've talked about him before on the Time Traveling Robots in Space, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine writing and producing vet. Okay, so we got that show, and we've got one other one on this list. Another former DS9er, Robert Hewitt Wolf, also had a show presented at the Sci-Fi Upfront on Tuesday called Defender. This show, which takes place in the aftermath of an intergalactic war between humans and transhumans, is set aboard the starship Defender, populated by a combustible mix of former enemies, which is sent on a seemingly simple goodwill mission, which turns into a fight for their lives and for the safety of the universe at large. Little else is known about Defender, and it hasn't gone into production yet. Let's hope it does, because both these shows are freaking awesome. If sci-fi can pull these off, can get these shows, both these shows on the air, then I will take back every bad thing I've said about sci-fi.
The channel or the genre?
The channel. Sci-fi, I should say. Sorry. There's a difference. Sci-fi with two Ys.
Wow. DS9 veterans are tearing it up. Good for them.
Yeah.
Good for them. I'm glad they, haven't lost interest in the genre altogether. Stop DS9 to just do rom-coms or something.
Yep. And I'm glad that sci-fi is kind of changing their tune on developing actual hard sci-fi shows. There was one other one on the list that I didn't include in the story, and that's Booster Gold. They are going to do a live-action Booster Gold show. Are you familiar with Booster Gold?
Mm-mm. No, I'm not.
I should have Brad here because he's the expert on comics, but Booster Gold is a superhero from the future. He was a person that made all this money, really rich guy that wanted to become a superhero, so he got a costume, he got all these gadgets and stuff, and then he traveled back in time to the age of superheroes in the Marvel Universe, and he becomes a superhero. He was... Actually, you know what? It's not Marvel. I believe it's DC, I think. See, I'm the wrong person to be talking about this. I'm not a comics books person, but this sounds awesome. Booster Gold is another show that they're developing.
Oh, all right. Well, good for them. Yet another thing that we must check out.
All right. So before we go on, Anessa has a great idea for the show title, by the way. And thank you, Anessa, for thinking ahead. Cuggles?
Cuggles.
What does that mean?
I mistyped cuddle because I was making fun of her that she would need cuddles by a robot prostitute, to put it delicately. And a cuggle, apparently, we decided is a cuddle and a hug.
Oh, okay. So, robot
gigolo. So it's not Robo Gigolo Cuggles. That is the name of the podcast.
All right.
And I agree. That's freaking tastic.
Great title. Great title. All right. So I think we can both honestly say that we're actually really excited about these shows. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to see what they come up with. I mean, I hope they're good. I want to be above. I don't want to be that guy that wants it to succeed. So I'm not. I don't want to say anything bad about it. I really want. Take The Hobbit for example. I really, really want to see The Hobbit do well. But there are a lot of things about it that I'm just kind of iffy on. So, and similarly, I would like to say, I'm genuinely excited for both of these shows. But we'll see if they're any good. I hope they are.
And both these shows are hardly in development, if at all. So we'll have to see if sci-fi can pull these off, because these are just shows that they're presenting as possible future programming. So
they at least seem interested, and that's encouraging.
Yeah. At least they're presenting them to their sponsors. It could be a lot worse. They could have them... They could be hiding them from their sponsors going, these are shows that we were thinking about working on, but we're not sure about, so we're not going to tell you about them. At least they're actually saying, hey, here's some shows that we would like to get on the air. Give us your money, sponsors.
these are worth money. People will watch them.
Yes.
The entirety of the Time Traveling Robots in Space podcast raves about it.
Yes.
I promise you.
Well, yes, let us be the judge of what you should put on the air, because we definitely get some great shows on the air. All right, I forgot to put the link in the lower third, and we'll put the links, of course, obviously, in the show notes of the podcast for the audio listeners if you want to read more about that story. All right, so biggest story of the week. You got it, Paul. What are we talking about here?
Ladies and gentlemen, we had last week, we had discussed the company Planetary Resources, a billion-dollar venture founded by lots of billionaires, lots of very important people, and James Cameron being one of them. I get the feeling that he was like wants to be one of the first people in space, or rather, like one of the people from that company to actually be in space. He's like, hey, I went to the bottom of the ocean. Look at how cool I am. And, you know, he's going to become our first asteroid miner. It is official, sir. We have asteroid mining. There is a company in the world that is job. This is their mission. This is real. They are freaking mining asteroids. They are going to asteroids. Let me be clear. They're going to asteroids. And they're getting materials from asteroids so we can use them. We are mining asteroids, Dave. This is what we're trying to do. We are living in the future.
Yes. You know what? And I just watched Jon Stewart's Daily Show segment on this from last night today.
That was freaking amazing.
I know.
I love that.
I love the line where he talks about, this is a new story that I imagined being covered in the time that we're living. That's not that, okay, I'm saying it all wrong, but he was basically saying this is the kind of news story.
This is the news of the future.
Yeah.
Like this is the something that you'd see on some sci-fi show,
yeah,
saying, hey, in today's news, we're mining asteroids. Yeah. Oh, that's swell.
Yeah.
No, this is real.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. It's like all of a sudden, all these things that we've been dreaming about all of our lives are coming true finally. And one of the coolest things about this announcement is they're not just mining for precious metals. Like, I think, what was the main thing?
Platinum.
Platinum, yeah. Platinum is very crucial in making electronics, but they're also going to be mining for water. And people don't realize that water is a very vital component in not just human survival, but in making fuels for powering spaceships.
Yeah, they had mentioned that on the Daily Show last night. It was something like, it's a ridiculous amount of money how much that apparently space water is worth a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like 2 pounds is like $50,000 or some nonsense like that. Apparently it's worth a lot of money. I don't know who decided that space water was worth a lot of money, but it's worth a lot of money.
the reason why it's so expensive is because we have to transport it from the Earth into space. And every pound that goes into space is a certain amount of money, and that's how they judge, that's how they determine the price of water. If they can get it from space, they won't have to lift it up with a rocket out of our atmosphere into the...
It actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Way to explain that, Dave. That now puts everything in the right perspective. Okay. Yeah, they had mentioned during this thing that it's not simply about what we can manufacture here, that is, here being on this planet. It's about what you can manufacture in space, because it actually helps considerably if you can actually build something, you know, whether it be a station or, you know, whatever, in space, because then you don't have to put it in space.
Yep, exactly. And this is just the first step. I mean, they're talking about, you know, one of the possibilities is having these fuel and water depots just scattered throughout near Earth orbit for ships to dock with.
Can anyone say Mass Effect fields?
Yes. No, it's got all the earmarks of future. Like the stuff that we've, like I said before, the stuff that we've been dreaming about all of our lives finally coming true. And they're being very, I'm sorry for hijacking your story, but I just love this.
No, go ahead, talk.
Okay. Well, just jump in whenever you want. Feel free to jump in. One of the things that...
Welcome to the Dave Talking Podcast. This is where Dave talks. And I talk quietly behind him. Go.
Okay. All right. So this company...
Not you, me.
All right. Sorry. This company is very realistic about their goals. They're going step by step by step. They're not like... They don't have these outlandish... Well, they've got these outlandish plans, but they're being very logical about how they're going to get there. They've got specific steps that they have to accomplish to get to the next step.
Right.
And they're not using their own rockets to get the stuff, their ships into space. They're going to be piggybacking. They're going to be on other people's rockets. So that even helps more because they don't have to build their own rockets.
Sure. Well, I believe they wanted to get this operational within 24 months. Mm-hmm. So 2 years. I mean, they'd have to work fairly quickly. And he also pointed out that he's envisioning dozens of people versus hundreds of people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, in other words, it's a relatively small venture. In fact, I think they're hiring. Sean in the chat room is actually pointing out, like, no, they're hiring. If you check out their careers page, it's all planetaryresources.com/careers. And you want to be a space miner, complete with the Aerosmith soundtrack. Go ahead.
Yeah. John Stewart.
And if you all know what I'm talking about, you're old.
Yeah. That was part of John Stewart's thing on The Daily Show. He played the Aerosmith Don't Want to Miss a Thing. Of course, that's from what movie now?
Come on. Really? Armageddon, sir.
Armageddon. I was thinking Deep Impact, but I was like, no, that's wrong.
No, it was the same year. And it was Armageddon versus Deep Impact. And in this case, Armageddon clearly wins.
But I actually thought Deep Impact was a very good movie as well. Morgan Freeman as the president, come on.
Yeah, Morgan. I agree. That was the best thing about the film, was Morgan Freeman as the president. I mean, who you have to listen to Morgan Freeman. He played God in several films. You have to listen.
Yeah, I know. Okay, by the way, I'm throwing in a bunch of links in the lower third of the video, and we'll put these in the show notes as well. Like, I've got a link to the actual mission from planetaryresources.com. I've got a link to the webcast of the announcement. I've got the link to the video they showed of actually how this is going to work. And the way it's going to work is they're going to be using robots. Again, another great thing about this is they're not sending people up there. They're making robots. So this can be put into two categories of our podcast, robots and space.
Once again, Planetary Resources takes it with, hey, this is their... Oh. Okay. Riddle me this, Dave. How awesome would it be if their first mining robot was named Bruce? Saying. Think about it.
Okay, what's that reference to? I'm missing the reference.
Never mind. It's gone.
Is that a video game reference, Paul?
No, it's not a video game. We were just talking about it. Bruce Willis.
Oh,
Armageddon. He's the world's best deep core driller. Come on.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Or Harry.
I'm a little
call him Harry. I don't care.
I'm a little bit slow. I'm sorry. Okay. Back to the
Michael Bay. Call him Michael Bay.
Michael Bay, yes. Okay. No, because Michael Bay ruined a lot of our childhood by putting out stupid Transformers.
Yes.
So maybe not Michael Bay.
And now he's ruining my teenage years with Armageddon. Thank you. Again.
All right. Back to the story for a second. The people involved in this are some really big heavy hitters, like Google's Eric Schmidt and Larry Page, along with Ross Perot Jr., who, by the way, not only is he a businessman and a billionaire, but he is a freaking pilot. He was in the Air Force. Ross Perot Jr.
Is that
was.
True?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
I figured he'd be like the furthest thing away from like a fighter pilot.
No, not at all. There were some other. The guy that founded the XPRIZE. And then I think it's Peter Diamandis.
Peter Diamandis.
And then there's some astronauts too. and some people that worked at NASA. So yep. These guys know what the hell they're doing, and I can't wait to go to asteroids.
Did I ever tell you that I worked with somebody who was part of the Apollo missions?
No.
Like he was part of he yeah he worked for NASA. He was what was his name? I worked with him at just this last job. His name escaped me. But anyway, his job was to, you know how when pilots sit in their, you know, and you see in the films, you see them, you know, in their little cockpits and you see where those buttons are.
Yeah.
He was the guy responsible for making sure the buttons were in the right place so that pilots can intuitively understand what is where.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was crazy. He's really old. I wish I could remember his name.
Well,
but anyway, yeah, that was his job. In fact, like when he worked for my company, he was just like, you know, working on NASA, that was great. But this software development, that's where it's at. it's total crap. But anyway.
Yeah, no. But it must have been cool to be talking to a guy like that that worked for NASA in the freaking space program for Apollo, the Apollo program. That's crazy.
Yep. Yeah, it was. He had a lot of really like he had a lot of really cool photographs. He had a lot of signatures from older astronauts and, you know, all the big ones that you might assume. So yeah, he himself was kind of a douche, but
he
was really
stories.
Smart. Yeah. And you know, there you go.
All right, cool. Yeah, I'm so excited about the space race that we're living in now. The whole private space race, because not only do we have planetary resources, we have SpaceX testing their Dragon capsule. I'm not saying it right. The Dragon spacecraft.
I don't know what you're saying, Dave.
The Dragon spacecraft.
You don't mean capsule, do you?
Capsule. Yes. Another word capsule? That I can't pronounce.
Okay.
Anyways, SpaceX is going to be launching their Dragon spacecraft next week, beginning of May.
Yeah.
And it's going to be the first private spacecraft to dock with the International Space Station, which is awesome. So this is a really great time that we're living in with the whole private space race this time instead of countries going at it, which is maybe even better because we may get more progress because there's money behind this. I don't know. We'll see.
Indeed, sir.
Okay, let's move on to our recommendations. And I'm pretty excited about mine because I just got word that Fringe got renewed for a fifth season for 13 episodes, which will wrap up the show this coming fall.
Yeah, one of the writers posted on Twitter. He's like, oh, by the way, we got renewed. I'm like, oh, sweet. And if you were following Galactic Netcast on Twitter, you'd have known that.
Yes, exactly. Okay, now...
you like that plug?
I just accepted a question from Mike, or this is more of a comment, but I don't understand it. Mm-hmm. Remember Salvage with Andy Griffith? He wanted to go up there and make a buck. I don't remember that, Mike. You'll have to refresh my memory after the show is done. You can explain it to me because I really don't know what the hell you're talking about. Do you know what he's talking about, Paul?
No. And you can't. Okay. Every time. Just bear with me for a second, Dave. Every single time somebody makes a reference that you don't understand, you can't assume that it's a video game.
Okay. I just expect that from you. That's all. It's not. You're the only one that I
understand that.
You're the only one that I do that to. I automatically think video game reference because I don't understand what he's talking about. So.
No, I kid. I kid.
Okay, so moving on with my recommendation, it is Fringe, the last two episodes of this last week. Actually, not last two episodes, one episode. Last week's episode. It's called Letters of Transit. It's the 19th episode of season 4. It aired last Friday, April 20th. It guest starred Henry Ian Cusick, best known for his role as Desmond on Lost, and actress Georgina Hegg. And here's the story of the episode Letters of Transit. In 2015, the Observers, no longer content with observing history, take over human society, killing many in an event called The Purge, and transform the remaining into a totalitarian culture. Though members of the Fringe Division attempt to fight the takeover, they were easily defeated, and the remaining Fringe Division allowed to remain to police the human natives. The Observers are aided by the ability to read most human minds, able to sense motives before they can be acted on. So, in 2036, FBI agents Simon Foster and Etta Bishop recover the body of Walter Bishop, who purposefully encased themselves and the others of his team in amber shortly after the Observer takeover. Though they are able to release him from the substance, they find that Walter has suffered memory damage without the mental capacity to build a strange device of Walter's own design. Nina Sharp tells them that Walter had William Bell remove a piece of his brain sometime in the past. So if you've watched the show, you know the backstory to that. Let's see. Which she postulates could be used to heal Walter's brain. They are able to retrieve the tissue from the old massive dynamic facility and inject Walter with it. A more coherent Walter explains that the Observers had made the Earth uninhabitable by the year 2609 and traveled in time to take over the planet themselves. He then leads the team to where the other members of the Fringe Division are also entombed in cases of amber. They release them, and then at the very end, Peter Bishop recognizes Etta as his daughter. So that opens a whole new, they've started a whole new storyline in Fringe that wasn't there before this episode. I believe that the final 13 episodes this coming fall are going to mostly be involved in this future where the Observers have taken over the human race. That's my opinion. Okay. That's my theory about how Fringe will end. And with this episode, you really see the importance of the whole Peter and Olivia relationship, because obviously they produced a daughter who is vital to the future of human civilization.
Awesome. That's, yes, absolutely. Fringe is on my list. And given that my schedule is cleared up considerably, I may actually watch that fairly soon. So, awesome.
Yeah, no, I suggest it highly. I think that you could maybe get away with watching very little of season one, except for maybe the first episode and the last episode of season one, and then pick up the series with pretty much every episode after that, because it's mainly a monster.
Is it worth watching? The first season, that is?
Yeah, no. I think a few of the episodes. Like I said, the pilot episode, obviously, and then the last episode of season one. The rest of the episodes during the first season were more like procedural, more like Monster of the Week kind of episodes. So, yeah. I'm sure there's a website online that you can find that tells you which episodes that you should watch that have to do with the whole mythology and the ongoing story arc of Fringe, if you wanted to find a website like that.
Okay, I may do that. It's one of those things that I've been wanting to catch up on and haven't gotten the chance. So, yeah, awesome. Thanks.
No problem. So there you go. My recommendation is last week's Fringe episode, Letters of Transit, which took place in the future and was about the Observers, who are also from the future, who traveled back in time. So it did have to do with one of our subjects, which is time travel. All right, Paul. What subject does your recommendation deal with?
My subject has to deal with 100% robots. And there's a lot of really cool robots. So, yeah, like I said, I just came watching Real Steel. And sure, I can give that a recommendation. I enjoyed that film. I thought it was fun. It is cheesy in a good way, you know, kind of a fun way. It's like, it's not really to be taken all that seriously. But, yeah, I personally, I enjoyed it. Everybody loves and a good underdog story, and that's really what this is about. Both in Adam's case, Adam being the, you know, underdog robot, and the underdog, I guess you could call him a trainer, of Hugh Jackman.
Do you want to explain the story just briefly for people that haven't seen Real Steel?
Sure. So, yeah. For all of you people who have no idea what Real Steel is, basically boxing has been replaced by instead of people fighting, you have robots fighting. So battle bots, basically. And it got really popular. And naturally so. I mean, seriously, who would to see two giant robots kick the crap out of each other? I mean, people already do that. And, like, yeah. We kind of do that already, but on a much smaller scale. Like, we have little battle bots that you see everyone, you know, those. I don't even know if those shows are around anymore.
No, I don't think they are.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's. I like the idea of, you know, giant robots kicking the crap out of each other, and they're really, really good at it. That's one of the things that I really enjoyed about the film, was the robots really looked good. I enjoyed that a lot. But anyway, you have Hugh Jackman, who typical story, a guy who strikes everybody as a loser, owes everybody money, and ends up with his 11-year-old kid who he'd never seen, really. Like, you know, like, he's an estranged father, forced with the kid. Obviously, the kid and him, you know, hate each other at first, but then grow to love each other. And over time, they actually, like, you know, one could say they love each other, and they bond over this, you know, robot boxing thing. So, yeah, and it's a typical story. They find this junk robot in some old industrial junkyard. And they fix him up, and they're like, oh, you know, hey, this robot is, you know, a stupid little battle bot, but the kid really likes it. So they end up taking it and, you know, and getting it into a really, you know, shady fight, like the equivalent of underground boxing. And, you know, end up winning, and, you know, they keep on winning until it earns enough notoriety that it actually gets to the point of them hitting the quote-unquote prime time, or the actual, like, I forget what they called it, but essentially the actual, like, league, the actual circuit.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is
that is what the film is about.
There is a bridge between our two recommendations, because I talked about a member of Lost, Desmond. The actor's name is Henry Ian Cusick, was in the Fringe episode that was my recommendation. And in Real Steel, Evangeline Lilly was in Real Steel. She was Kate.
Awesome.
In Lost. So
yeah,
both our recommendation have cast members from Lost, which is awesome.
And one thing you may not know is that DreamWorks has announced they are in fact developing a sequel, written by the same guy who wrote the screenplay of the original, and they hired him to write the second. So I hope that it is. I hope it's better, but good on him. I am glad for their success.
You know what? Real Steel reminded me of a futuristic Over the Top. Have you ever seen Over the Top?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, I have, sir. Over the Top is one of the best worst movies ever. Ever. Like, even more than Battleship.
Oh, those are fighting words. You haven't even seen Battleship yet, my friend. So don't be talking that smack until you've seen it, all right?
All right, fine. I had to jab at you a little bit.
All right, before we wrap up.
You know, just one quick point I wanted to touch on. Have you ever seen, and I promise there's a correlation between these two points. Have you ever seen Moneyball?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Here was my thought. People don't like the idea of Moneyball because they feel like it waters it down. It dissects the game into the point of it being a science. That's the argument, and it loses the human element of the game. I kind of thought a similar thing when you watch Real, because you're talking about robots, very yes or no, ones and zeros kind of mentality. But at the same time, it's very it's very emotionally driven. So I find it funny that people are concerned about all of these, I guess, really technical things, that they're going to lose the heart of the game. And yet in both circumstances, they're producing a very emotional moment. So that was my correlation. Just, you know, food for thought. Go dissect people.
No, good aspect. Thank you for bringing that up. Okay, before Paul Swickard, the philosopher of the group. Thank you very much.
I know, it's what I do.
All right, before we wrap up here, question of the week time. Ready, Paul?
Absolutely. I was told it would be multiple choice.
Yes, we have three options, and this involves the asteroid mining. So here we go. If you had to work on an asteroid mining for minerals or water, what job would you rather have? And you have three choices. A, defending the asteroid from the constant barrage of enemy alien spacecraft. So this is kind of farther into the future, not the mining asteroids that we're going to be doing in a few years. B,
okay,
leading the advanced group that goes ahead of the miners looking for almost invisible portals into other dimensions. Or C, this is my favorite. I don't know if I'm going to pick this one, but this is my favorite. Explaining the meaning of life, explaining the meaning of life to your robot companion Joe, who you work next to, chipping away at the rocks,
Bruce,
day in, day out, while the alien overlords keep you in line. So basically, C is a result of A failing. It sounds like.
I like it. I really like it. Yeah, that would actually make a pretty fun movie. Just like a kind of like, I'm envisioning kind of like a dark comedy kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Like you have this indentured servant who's a human, and you have an indentured servant who's a robot, and neither one of them understand each other.
Mike asks, does Joe have a thick India accent? It could. I guess you could program it. You could program it too.
This is Joe.
Yeah. So what's your answer?
I'm calling you from Iowa? What?
What's your answer?
My answer, yes. Absolutely B.
B.
I love B. Leading in advance that goes ahead, miners to look for invisible portals. Are you kidding? If I could be like MacGyver, absolutely I'm going.
Does it remind you of the video game Portal?
No, it reminds me of Stargate.
Oh, okay. Yeah. By the way,
and so, I'm hence still, again, reference, MacGyver.
Okay.
Richard Dean Anderson.
Oh, Richard Dean Anderson. He's from Minnesota. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. He's from my state, which is awesome. And I'm still hooked on, I'm still hooked on Stargate. I'm watching season two. I'm at the very end of season two. So I still got a long ways to go, but I'm very excited about Stargate.
Awesome.
Okay.
Awesome.
My answer is going to be...
And you, sir. Yes.
I think it's going to be A and C. I think I'm going to pick the two. So there I was.
Both.
So there I was in my machine... not machine gun, but I picture a laser gun type turret like on the Millennium Falcon from Star Wars. You know, when Luke and Han are fighting off the TIE fighters in Episode 4, A New Hope, and they both have their gun... I'm envisioning that type of arrangement for fighting off the horde, the barrage of enemy alien spacecraft. But then they overrun us. We can't handle it anymore. So the aliens take over, and me and my robot companion Joe are forced to mine the minerals of the asteroid while I explain the meaning of life to him.
So you want the original film and you want the sequel is what you're telling me.
Yeah, pretty much. That sounds about right.
All right. All right. I guess I can get behind that.
Okay. If you have an answer to our question of the week, let us know. Call the voicemail number 805-328-3966 and we will feature your voice on this show. Or you can just email us galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. And that's going to do it for... another Galactic Netcast, Time Traveling Robots in Space, number 30. Any final thoughts, Paul?
Be excellent to each other.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, Paul. Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.